Good morning. Good morning. Beautiful day here in Fairhaven, and we've had a really interesting program, as we usually do, but it's been really interesting. A lot of variety and people calling in from the islands. It was just fun. And we're returning to Fairhaven now. We have a candidate for the select board here, Miles Grant, joining me in the studio. Good morning, Miles. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. Great to be with you.
You're stepping up to represent and manage, in some ways, Fairhaven. What's inspiring you to jump into the political chaos that is Fairhaven?
Yeah, you know, I'm on the planning board. I ran for the planning board last year. And when I went around and told people I'm running for planning board, they said, good for you. We need good people to step up. And now I'm going around telling people I'm running for select board this year. And they say, are you okay? Do you know what you're getting into? And I say, yes, I do. That I really love Fairhaven. I believe we need good people to step up. You know, we are a small town, so we don't have a huge number of people who are ready and willing to do this. I think especially in a town that has, you know, some political divisions right now on the local level and obviously on the national level as well, that it takes a little bit of backbone to be able to stand up and say, I'm willing to take these slings and arrows if need be.
Sure.
To be willing to vote one way, maybe that's not the most popular way in town, that might come with some people, you know, seeing some downsides to it. But to say we need to make a decision that is the best decision we can and mm-hmm. be willing to stand by it and be willing to move on to the next thing, because we've certainly got a lot of problems to tackle.
Miles Grant, how's your experience been on the planning board? What surprised you about being on the planning board, Miles Grant?
I think it's been a tale of 2 years on the planning board, that I joined last spring in 2025, that unfortunately the planning board lived up to its reputation, or down to it, that we had a big controversy around the Timothy Hiller subdivision near the wind turbines, was a Windmill Estates, that received constructive approval, it's called, by the state, that it was not brought to the board's attention until it had already been available for, what is it, 150 days, and been approved that the developer could go ahead with it, which is a provision in state law to say the planning board has to act and it can't leave developers hanging forever, but instead it was kept from the full planning board. You know, I think we got all the heat we deserved for that one.
Okay.
Between our town planner, between the planning board, we got heat, we deserved it. We as a planning board have moved on this year. We have a new chair, Jessica Fidalgo. Mm-hmm. She's done a great job on keeping us focused on the issues to make sure that our conversations are used well, that we don't get distracted by any, you know, personal issues or, you know, any side distractions. I think 2026, the planning board is back on the right track.
Okay. What is inspiring you to run for the Board of Selectmen? What do you think you can bring to the Board of Selectmen that the town needs? Talk about that.
We're in a tough spot as a town. If you want to see the town grow, if you want to see us address problems, that, you know, obviously there's not a lot of change left in the couch cushions to, you know, pull out and say, oh, we can go solve this, you know, responsible you know, growth issue if we want to spend money on safe streets or schools. But I think that's when people do need to step up. I think it's easy to run when times are good. When times are hard, that's when the town really needs you. And I love a challenge.
Proposition 2.5 override. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I've been going around knocking doors. I knocked 150 doors this weekend and talked to voters, you know, all across town. What I hear from people is, I just don't trust town hall to spend my money well right now. And I understand that, given that we've spent a few years in, you know, with some turmoil at town hall. We've had cycled through some town administrators. We've had a lot of turnover on select board and other places. So I hear that frustration and I hear that lack of trust. And I think, you know, when we talk about the override, and we'll certainly talk about that, but any issue that we're going to deal with in Fairhaven, if you don't have the trust of people in town hall, you're just not going to be able to make progress.
Right.
So again, coming back to the override, you know, I think that this override is a Band-Aid on the bigger issue, mm-hmm. that it's just enough funding to get us through this year without getting too close to the state mandated school spending minimum,
right?
Where right now we are 0.6% above that, which is by far the lowest in the area. The override will provide funding for that. It'll provide money for economic development and tourism. It'll provide money for first responders and a few other places like that. But I think if you look ahead, if you believe our town administrator, Keith Hickey, we're going to be in an even tougher spot next year. Mm-hmm. The windmills that are continue to bring in some revenue at some point, that's going to go away.
Yep.
If you look at our school situation where Acushnet's been sending their kids to Fairhaven High School for a long time now, that they've now negotiated a contract with Old Rochester, so that's an option for their students. It remains to be seen if they'll sign a futures contract with us. But that's going to be a loss of revenue of some degree.
Right.
So I think next year we're going to be right back in the spot, but this would get us to that next year. And I think if this override doesn't pass, again, I understand that people don't trust Town Hall with their money right now. I understand a lot of people are struggling right now. You look at the broader economy, that gas prices have gone up 50% in however long. You know, inflation's been at 4% a year for how many years now since COVID? We're looking at 4%, perhaps more this year, depending on how bad things get. People are struggling. You can see my 2011 Toyota Camry with 250,000 miles on it sitting right out there. You know, making the mortgage every month is hard.
Sure.
So I understand that people are, you know, up against it. But if we have to get more money for our schools, if we have to get more money for our first responders, and looking ahead, perhaps more money for the whole town, I think this override for me would be $78 a year. Yeah, $78 a year.
Okay.
I think that's reasonable. I think I'm willing to find the money in my budget, and I hope others are as well.
We have Miles Grant. He's running for the select board. He's a member of the planning board now. Miles, one of the responsibilities of the select board is to hire people, right, and keep them. You got to hire good people and somehow hold on to them. If you look on the Mass Municipal Association's website, which I do, which I'm a nerd, but it's very interesting. Every town is looking for qualified city and town employees. So there's a real market out there for very few qualified individuals. What are your thoughts and theories on that?
I think a lot of issues come back to, well, what are our values as a town? You know, do we value getting and keeping good people? Do we value making good decisions? Do we value good management, both of people and of finances? And, you know, I think a lot of our conversations, unfortunately, are very, you know, finance committee driven, they're very budget driven, and people just see the dollar figure on the page. Mm-hmm. And sure, it's easy to lower that dollar figure and say, maybe we can get somebody for, you know, $50,000 or $45,000 or whatever it is. But I think if we really value a strong town government that is making good decisions for the town, doing right by the people, providing good services, and again, making those smart decisions, because we're, you know, right now volunteer select board going forward. We are a volunteer planning board, and as with so many of our committees, and we're relying on that staff for that good advice. We need a good, strong town administrator who knows what he's doing.
Right.
We have that right now. We're in the process of hiring an urgently needed town planner.
Right.
I hope we get somebody who's good and that we can keep.
Miles Grant is a candidate for the select board here in Fairhaven. Miles, if people want to learn more about you, get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that? I know you're on social media, but tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Sure. They can find me on Facebook if they just search Miles Grant for select board. bit.ly/MilesGrant is a link to my website. But otherwise, I hope folks find me around town. I'm trying to be seen. I'm trying to talk to as many people as I can between now and June 9th.
You mentioned trust. What are people's reaction when you knock it on their doors?
You know, I think the number one thing is that we have so many people in town who are connected, who love Fairhaven, who've been here for a long time, following the issues. I think they really respect that somebody's coming to their door, mm-hmm. asking what they think, and asking for their vote.
Right.
It doesn't happen every day in this town. So I think I'm getting a very positive reaction in that way. I think early on there was a lot of negativity about the override before people start talking about the override and how we're going to raise your taxes before they start making the case for what we're going to do with that money.
Right.
How is that going to improve our town? I think now that people have heard more of that case made by the select board, made by Keith Hickey and others, there's a group now advocating for yes on the override. I think the reaction is a little bit more understanding that mm-hmm. at least people have heard both sides of the issue. I think there's a little bit more openness to that. But beyond that, you know, people want to know about me more than any issue. I don't get asked about a lot of issues at the door. What I get asked about is, why are you running? Why should I trust you with my vote?
Right.
And again, it does come back to some of that lack of trust in town hall and to be able to say to people, look, I'm here right now. I'm going to be here after June 9th, whether I'm on the select board or back to the planning board.
Right.
But I love this town. I value this town. And I really do believe in having these personal in-person conversations,
sure.
not just the fighting on social media that we see so much of. I think having these in-person conversations, and we made so much progress on that in this town in the last couple of years with all the town events, the fairs, Seeing thousands of people come out to watch Jaws down at Fort Phoenix last year was amazing. So that's where it ties back to the override for me, that we're going to lose that. If the override doesn't pass, it'd be unfortunate to take a step back in some of those better town conversations that we've been having and some of that better town spirit. But I'd look for ways to try to grow that going forward.
Miles Grant is my guest. You can speak to him at 508-996-0. If I want to take a break, and then we'll be right back. I want to remind you that this hour is brought to you by the cold beer and the world's best chicken wings at Rose Alley Ale House in downtown New Bedford. Looks like it's going to be a good day to sit on the deck at Rose Alley. Stick around.
This portion of programming on WBSM is brought to you by D's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get two hot dogs, chips, and a soda for just $6.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy, weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Running 30 minutes late, singing Margaritaville and minding my own. Some foreign car driving dude with a road rage attitude pulled up beside me talking on his cell phone. He started yelling at me like I did something wrong. He flipped me the bird and then he was gone. Some beach somewhere.
Welcome back to the program. Of course, that's another song written by my 10 o'clock guest, Paul Overstreet. Some beach. It's a great song. You know, May is propane month. And Columbus Energies is showing folks like you just how much propane can do for their home. Learn more about the opportunities propane brings by visiting columbusenergies.com/propane. Columbus Energy is a hell of a company. I got to know them. They're not just a regular advertiser. I got to know them through Lenny Mills and Jimmy DeMello, both of whom own substantial business and residential properties. And they use Columbus Energy. So, by all means, they're worth checking out. Propane heats your home, fuels your appliances, fires up your grill, and keeps your generator ready. One fuel, a whole lot of value. If you're thinking about switching to propane, Columbus Energies will handle the tank, the install, the paperwork, making the transition simple and seamless. Now, safety comes standard with every Columbus Energy propane visit, including a thorough safety check, which is really how propane service should be done. Propane is a clean fuel. Compared with electric, it usually costs less and works better. Curious about how much you can save, and why wouldn't you be, by switching to propane? Try out the Columbus Energy's propane versus electric calculator at columbusenergies.com/calculator. Spread your fuel costs evenly throughout the year, skipping those very expensive surprises with the seasonal spikes in prices. With the Columbus Energy's Smart Pay program, need a tank set of delivery or a few honest answers? Wouldn't that be nice? Honest answers. Give Columbus Energies a call. They'll always be there when you need them. We're joined by Miles Grant here in the studio with us. He's running for the select board in Fairhaven. Miles, what are your thoughts on the Rogers School?
We just had an event at Rogers School a couple weeks ago where we brought some of the community together. Some of our current and former elected officials, Pam Keechler, who is on the school committee now running for select board, Stacey Powers, some other folks, just to talk about where it is, because it's been tied up in litigation now for a really significant chunk of time. I think there are a lot of folks who've moved to town within the last, you know, 5 or 6 years and might not have heard anything about it.
Right.
That, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, families in town, seniors in town, folks who've been here for a long time. We have a lot of folks who've moved here later in life, be it for a job or to retire here. And I don't think they've really been engaged on Rogers in the decision-making process there. So a lot of folks really appreciated hearing the backstory of how we got here, the history of the building itself, how beautiful it is inside. You know, people here haven't been inside for a very long time either. But talking about where are we going to go from here? Hopefully litigation gets freed up at some point in the future. And then what are we going to do with that building, with that large piece of property? I think it's a property that's owned by the town. I think we need to have a town-wide conversation about what can this property do for us as a town.
Right.
We need things like housing, especially senior housing here in town. We need to bring some more vibrancy to town center, some customers for some of these businesses in the town center that, you know, we see a lot of nice businesses open in town center. Some seem to struggle and not quite make it. I think having more customers in the center would be great. And, you know, that development, if we could bring it to a place like the Rogers School site, we wouldn't need to pay for new streets and paving new streets. We wouldn't need to pay for new sewer lines.
Okay.
Wouldn't need to pay to, you know, plow new streets. That's, you know, baked in costs that would be supporting this new development. So I think that's a smart budget decision in the long run.
Miles Grant is my guest here in the studio. Miles, the 40B development that's been proposed for Route 6, your thoughts on that?
Sure. It's on the current Gborn Knowles site across from Lifestyles Plaza, a little bit down Route 6. It'd be about, I think, 224 new units of housing. And again, it's urgently needed housing. If you try to rent an apartment in Fairhaven, good luck. Even trying to buy a house, you don't have too many options in town. So I think giving more options to folks, you know, especially folks who might be young workers, might be young families that need a place before they buy a house, I think that'd be great. You know, it is unfortunate that we haven't built enough affordable housing in town that we don't have a choice about whether to allow this 40B, that it's coming whether we like it or not.
Right.
We're lucky that they are a friendly 40B that is willing to negotiate about, you know, how they're going to do the developments, some of the amenities and fringe, you know, things like how we're going to design the parking lot, the exits. I'm very excited that they are talking about making it accessible from the bike path, which would open up a nice little transportation option for folks who want to get down to Stop and Shop, the center and beyond, really engage with the community there and not just dump more traffic onto Route 6. It would be more revenue for the town. It would certainly help grow the town at a time, you know, over the last 50 years or so that we've been stagnant or even slightly declining in population. So I think it would be a benefit to the town, and I'm very optimistic that they're willing to make some negotiation to make it as best for the community as they can.
Miles Grant is my guest. He was very diplomatic when he was explaining, you can't stop them. Right? You can't stop them even if you wanted to, because Fairhaven, so you understand, does not meet the 10% of the population. Housing stock is not affordable. So like many communities around here, with the exception of New Bedford, you don't have the option to stop, even if you wanted to.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, I do think it's a tough spot because that stretch of Route 6 is already very dangerous.
Yeah.
There was a bad crash there just a couple of months ago. We've had a couple of deaths on Route 6, unfortunately. So that's already been a priority of mine to look at Route 6. And, you know, it's designed as a highway right now. Is that serving our community
right.
best? You know, I don't think if we were building Route 6 today, we would, in a million years, build a highway through the middle of town. Would we build a boulevard? Would we build a nice main street that kind of brought our community together, let people get where they're going, let them get to new businesses, but not be so, you know, dangerous, loud, and just, you know, not a really pleasant place to live on? I think these folks are going to deserve a better road than a really loud highway going by their house.
Right.
So what can we do in the long run to redesign that to be a little bit more friendly? And, you know, as somebody said a while back, you know, make it a place that you go to and not just a cut through.
We got some people who want to speak with you, Miles, which is always a positive development. We'll see when we answer the calls. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I've been listening to statements here. And like you say, the override would be about $78 on a homeowner. I happen to be retired at fixed income, so I have to watch. Now, that's all well and fine if that was the only increase we're going to have. But as we see, the governor is adding a tax on a tax. They're adding more money into the electric. This is all going to come out of my fixed income, which is held. My fixed income doesn't say, oh, they're charging you more, we're going to bring you up more. That doesn't happen. So, you know, it's like talking to a used car salesman. They give you all these great points about that one thing. Put it all together, please. And then make the statement, because you're not the only one that's going to say we're going to increase for next year. There's probably going to be another three or four. And my income is not going to jump up by, well, what is it, 2%? I have a problem with that. Thank you for my listening.
Sure. My income is not jumping up this year as well. That I'll be, you know, asking for an increase in salary. But I think for all of us across town, that salary increases are not a given. Again, you know, I hear folks that are struggling with this. But I think if you look at, you know, inflation's going up, healthcare costs are skyrocketing, that, you know, we need to provide at least cost of living increases for our folks if we're going to hope to keep folks and keep them from jumping to another town. Mm-hmm. How are we going to raise that revenue? I think we can look at lots of different ways to do that. We can look at, you know, property tax and the override that, that we're doing. There's a trash fee, but if we raise the trash fee, that's not going to be proportional to folks' home value, where somebody's home might be worth millions of dollars or somebody whose home is worth, you know, $400,000 like mine. With a trash fee increase, you're both paying the same. At least the override, somebody whose house is worth a lot more pays more. Somebody whose house is worth less pays less. You know, there are a few other ways that, that we can raise revenue, but the, they're pretty limited in Massachusetts right now, besides the property tax. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place here, that, you know, we need to spend more on our schools. We have a lot of needs in town that are coming around. You know, we're going to have some capital needs coming down the road as well. How are we going to fund these? I think we need to have a conversation in town about how best to do that. I think we certainly have some mechanisms to protect seniors in town. I think for seniors who are already in senior housing, that they're going to be shielded a little bit from this. There's other programs to protect seniors from the worst impacts of this. But, you know, I want to be able to think about everybody in town. What about the kids in town,
right,
who need a good education? What about the working families in town who are thinking, is Fairhaven the place for us in the long run? We need to be considering everyone's needs.
Miles Grant is my guest. He's looking for your vote on June 9th?
June 9th.
For the select board. We got some other people on hold. Good morning. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good morning. I actually just had a question. I know, referencing a statement that you made recently about the arguing in town and as far as social media, and I was actually calling in because I wasn't sure what your stance is on that, because I know as a planning board member that you've made some off-the-remark statements to some of the constituents in town, and I wasn't sure, given your history with the comments that you've made on the planning board, how would you change the way that you respond to constituents as a select board member?
Do you have any specific examples there?
I actually could, and I have been open-minded as far as your candidacy, but I know at one point I had made a statement online, this was a little while back, in regards to some of the ongoings in town, and you actually referred to me specifically as a weirdo.
Is this Aaron Carr's husband, by any chance?
My name is David Gerber, yes.
Yeah. You know, I definitely regret calling you a weirdo. I think sometimes we all get pushed on social media and say things that we wish we hadn't. But I think we also have people in town who are, you know, embracing social media as a way to get attention. I think we have people in town using social media to deepen our divisions, to push the drama. So I certainly have tried to pull back from all that as much as I can and have these conversations in person instead.
And that makes a lot of sense. As far as the statements that are made online, I mean, essentially, once they're made forever. And as far as speaking to people in person, obviously, there's not that level of accountability that goes on. And I also bring this up because I also saw recently that you made another dismissive comment to someone in regards to the Ann Swords podcast, where you referred to the, I can't rehash the exact wording, but you dismiss them and refer to it as like silly questions. My concern, obviously, as anyone that's going to run in a position like that, that's going to be in a leadership role of town, that they can handle and be able to express rationally and unbiased responses to people when they have opposing views.
Thanks for the call. Thank you for the call.
You know, I've absolutely sought out people of opposing viewpoints. I'm the only candidate running for office this year who's spoken to both the Democratic Town Committee and the Republican Town Committee, answered every question that both of those committees had for me, had some really good conversations, honestly. I think we need to have feedback from both sides of the aisle. And if you look back at my record, that in certainly my job and my career, I worked for the National Wildlife Federation. Part of the work was reaching out on conservation issues to people who are Democrats, to people who are Republicans, and trying to figure out how can we bring people together. What values do we share rather than what's dividing us?
Right. Right. Miles, listen, I really appreciate you coming in, taking calls and answering them all to the best of your ability. Good luck on June 9th. Tell people how they can learn more about your campaign or get in touch with you.
Again, folks can search on Facebook, Miles Grant for Select Board. My website is bit.ly/MilesGrant, and I hope to earn folks' vote on June 9th.
Thank you, my friend. Thanks for coming in, taking calls from my audience. I do appreciate it. Folks, stick around. Open phones when we come back. Brief break. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Time or two. She said, hello, my name is Bobby Joe. Meet my twin sister, Betty Lou. And we're both feeling kind of wild tonight. You're the only cowboy in this place. And if you're up for a rodeo, I'll put a big Texas.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Chris McCarthy, and I want to thank Miles Grant for coming in and sitting down and taking questions. And I'll invite him back if he wins the election. Actually, even if he doesn't, he can come back. He's on the planning board, and we all got to figure out a way to get along, right? And we need more people to step up in every community, for the appointed boards, for the elected boards. You see that in the city of New Bedford. You certainly see it here in Fairhaven. It's the 80-20 rule. 20% of the people are doing 80% of the work. I see that here in Fairhaven, although there's a rule now. They're going to try to limit that. We'll see how that works out. I hope it works out for the better, but it might work out that the reliable people can no longer serve, and you end up with more vacancies. So I know in the city of New Bedford, because we follow the news closely, and the agendas of the city council, you often see the same names coming to serve on multiple boards because they don't get people to step up. And that's not good. I mean, the mayor and I have talked about it. The Bowling Alone, Bowling Alone was a book written years ago now about how people don't join bowling leagues. People don't do social activities. They don't do volunteerism. At least that's according to the theory of this book. And I see it in my own life that my work here in the news department, here in a news organization, where you have access to a lot of material, and you see the same names over and over again. And a lot of people just think it's somebody else's responsibility. And I got to tell you, I encourage everybody to get involved in government. Now, some of us have more limited free time than other people. And I recognize that. And there's different points in life. Maybe what you could have done 10 years ago, you can no longer do. Maybe what you couldn't do 10 years ago, you can now do today. But remember that you're paying the taxes. So you have a right and a responsibility to step up and serve on some of these volunteer committees, some of these elected positions. And that's in Mattapoisett, Freetown, Fairhaven, the city of New Bedford. Everybody in the sound of my voice, including you, Nantucket, and Martha's Vineyard. So, I've been talking about this article in the New Bedford Light, talking about the deficit that is facing the city of New Bedford. But it's a little bit elusive in the sense that the budget is balanced. The mayor and his financial team balance the budget. It's against the law not to have a balanced budget in this Commonwealth if you're a municipality. So there is a balanced budget. But what does it mean when they talk about the $32 million deficit? So I know there's a lot of people out there, because a lot of people have called me saying, you know, what's happening with this? How, if there's a balanced budget, is there a deficit? And I think Colin Hogan did a really good job talking about that. So I'm going to play a clip, but I do encourage you to go to newbedfordlight.org and read the article its entirety, or have the robot play it for you. But I'm going to get you started right now. It's called The Anatomy of a Budget Deficit by Colin Hogan. And there's another really interesting article in the New Bedford Light about the Capitol Theater. The Capitol Theater, that's probably an article for another day. But check it out so you know what's going on.
The Anatomy of a Budget Deficit by Colin Hogan. From gas to groceries, everything's getting more expensive. But one number caught the residents of New Bedford off guard. $32 million. That's what Mayor John Mitchell said was the difference between the projected cost of city government next year and its revenue. In a budget address to city councilors May 13th, Mitchell outlined that closing that gap would mean both higher taxes and service cutbacks, including layoffs. Notably, Mitchell proposed closing Fire Station 9, though the closure could be temporarily delayed, and Mitchell has said he prefers reducing the staffing on fire engines across the city instead. Residents and officials were surprised by the size of New Bedford's deficit. Mitchell himself projected a $13 million deficit in the weeks before his budget address. And last year, New Bedford came in under budget. Even in the current fiscal year, recent auditors' reports show that New Bedford had spent 49.8% of its funds through the first two quarters, keeping the city basically on track. Projected overages in police and healthcare spending may lead to a 0.5% deficit by year's end, the same report found. The city council received the proposed budget when the public did, and while I was aware there was a budget deficit, the figures presented by the mayor have fluctuated significantly over the past few weeks, said Councillor James Roy in an online post. But for residents and officials seeking to understand the budget, the $32 million deficit figure may be less informative than a deeper dive into what costs are actually going up. In fact, the $32 million figure captures the scale of decisions that the administration made to balance the budget, including denying $8 million worth of spending increase requests and proposing position eliminations and layoffs worth close to $4 million, but the figure does not actually appear in the budget proposal itself. Instead, understanding how New Bedford's $535 million budget works can help people understand their taxes, their local government, and advocate to officials for their needs. What does it mean to have a deficit? The budget that Mayor Mitchell presented was balanced. Total revenue exactly matched total spending. Both were $535,185,600.00 in the general fund. When Mitchell talks about facing a $32 million deficit, he's figuring in decisions that don't appear in the budget book. For example, the administration said that city departments requested $8 million in spending increases. These could be requests from the library, police, zoo, cemeteries, or health department to hire more staff or purchase new equipment. This year, those requests were denied wholesale. So, $8 million of the total $32 million will not result in immediate staffing reductions or significant service reductions. Instead of adding services, Mitchell proposes eliminating positions. That includes many empty positions in city government, 58 positions in total, including dozens of police officers the city hopes to hire. The city usually calculates its budget for fully staffed departments, and eliminating empty positions can have big impacts on the budget without needing to lay off employees. However, these eliminations can affect the long-term growth and capacity of a department. Other decisions could have immediate consequences. 34 people would be laid off in the mayor's proposal, and the fire department would bear the brunt, with 26 people slated to lose their jobs.
Okay, so I would encourage you to that's part of the article, but go have the robot read it to you. You can read it yourself at newbedfordlight.org. The article is The Anatomy of a Budget Deficit by Colin Hogan. 508-996-0500. We got some people on hold. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good. What's happening?
Hanging in there. It was good to hear from Mr. Ogletree.
Yes.
Very good interview. He did a great job.
Overstreet.
Sounds like
yeah.
a great guy.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy. Overstreet, yeah.
Yeah. You know, let's just take a look at this New Bedford budget here.
Okay.
You know, he did a, Colin Hogan did a great job, but he's overlooking one thing. He's trying to tell us that the New Bedford and Fire Department is where we're spending the most money, which is not true. It's 10.8% of the budget. 66% is the public school department. Let's just take a quick look here. Well, he was saying it's $290 million. It's over $300 million. So the superintendent of schools, Andrew O'Leary, he gets paid $234,000 a year. Then he's got the senior executive assistant to the superintendent. The executive assistant to the another executive assistant to the superintendent. Then you got a deputy superintendent, three assistant superintendents, five executive directors, a human capital service. And then you got executive director of human capital service, executive assistants, two employee relations managers. Then you got employee that's actually three employment relations managers, an equity, diversity, and recruitment manager, three capital service representatives, a benefits administrator, and then you got the assistant superintendent of finance and operations, David Flynn, over $100,000. You got two budget analysts, an executive assistant to the budget analyst, administrative assistants, school construction facilitator, accounts payable supervisor, assistant supervisor, and four accountant specialists. So we got a lot of these, you can look it up, but they're getting over $140,000. So that's where we need to make the cuts. And he's trying to sell us. Yeah, although you have some of the ranking officers that are making 200 plus, Barry brought that up, about in the top 20. But, you know, the average police officer is getting anywhere between $49,000 to $130,000. These are just the police officers on the beat, you know. And the average employee in the city can make anywhere between $100,000 to $200,000. It all depends on the position.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard much of cuts in the school department. That's what we need. It's 66% of the budget. You know, we're being told it's $290 million. I believe it's over $300 million. So that's where we need to make the cuts. Not police and fire. It's only 2.8% of the pie.
Right. And so I
government operations.
I understand.
9.4%.
Yeah, I understand why your eye would be drawn to those tremendous figures, but and not to put you on the spot, but do you understand the net school spending formula and how that all works?
Well, we're being told different things about what the formula is. What is the formula?
What I mean is, do you understand?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know. But what I'm saying is that the state of Massachusetts pay, and Colin Hogan pointed that out in his article, that which you can read at newbedfordlight.org, and it's been pointed out multiple times by me as well, that the city of New Bedford, unlike the suburbs, gets the majority of its school budget paid for by the state of Massachusetts. So any cuts to the city budget would result in returning money to the state, not to the city taxpayers. The property tax paid by city residents, the bulk of that money does not go to the school system. So cutting the school budget would be have a negative impact on the whole city of New Bedford. That's I get it. It's the biggest part of the budget, but it's a pass-through. It's a pass-through. The state is really paying that. All right, I got to take a quick break. Actually, no, I'll try to get this caller in. Good morning. Thanks for holding. I appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
What's
How's it going?
Good. How's it going?
Hey, you know, that other gentleman, I understand what you talk about with the school budget, but he brings up a great point. All of this money is being wasted. And it's across the board. It's in different departments. You know what we're taught in these leadership meetings, Chris, these corporate structures? We're taught to delegate tasks, okay. Which leaves you with what? Nothing to do, correct? I don't understand it, Chris. Literally, you take these, you're going into that corporate structure, and they tell you, we're going to send you to these trainings, to these courses, to be an effective leader. And one of the main things they teach you is to delegate work.
Right.
So you sit there and you're saying, okay, so if I delegate all my tasks, you basically want to pay me for doing nothing. And I think that's what the previous gentleman brought up, like all of these executive assistants, all of this fat, all of this pork, it's wasted funds. And I understand that it's refunded or whatever by the state. But this is not just the school system. This is everything across the board, everywhere you look. And you look at these, and if you were really to audit it, you'd be like, what does everybody do all day? Absolutely nothing. You know what I mean? I have a bunch of friends that work from home, and they do absolutely nothing. They push Microsoft Excel spreadsheets. Literally, that's all they do. Plug and play numbers, and then they're done for the day. It's disgusting, and that's a big problem that's going on. And I think that's what the gentleman's trying to bring up. Again, it's not just in the school system. Right. It's everywhere. Just look around.
Thank you for the call, my friend. 508-996-0500. I gotta take a break. If you're on hold, stay there. I'll get to you. Stick around. We'll be right back. But the author of that song is Paul Overstreet, doing it to country songs. And you can stream it online. It's all very interesting stuff. Again, I would encourage you to check out pauloverstreet.com and his Facebook page. Really, really interesting guy. Really tremendous career. All right, we're talking local issues now. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. Thank you for holding.
Hi, Chris. Is it me?
Yes, yes, you. Good morning.
Okay, I have a question. Okay. I heard what you said to the previous caller about the school budget.
Yes.
And the funding of the school budget. But does the I don't know the answer to this question. Does
okay.
the school funding stipulate that it must be spent on higher level positions, such as all those assistants to the superintendent, or does it just give an amount per child?
So that's a very good question. Basically, most education funding is explained as a per student. You know, here much, and often the money, if a kid leaves, the money follows the student. Which is part of the conversation we were having with Miles Grant about the fact that some of the Acushnet kids who used to come to Fairhaven are now going to go to other schools, like Old Rochester, maybe New Bedford High School, and the money follows the kid. So, as for an example, in the city of New Bedford, the bulk of the money comes from the state, not the property taxes, although you do have to meet minimum school spending, net minimum school spending, and if you don't, the state cuts off money as well. So do they have to have as many administrators? I don't think that's written into the law, that they have to have so many high-paid administrators. I don't believe the law is written that way. I would be surprised if it is. But the school committee makes that budget, and it's already been reviewed by the city council. In fact, the city council is in their budget season now. So it's kind of an interesting time to watch the city council. You can check it out on cable television. You can see it on the internet. That's how I watch it. Watch the different city councilors asking questions. All they can do, and I know regular listeners know this, but there's a lot of new listeners now. The city council cannot add money to the budget. They can only cut. So if you think the city council is going to add money, say, to save the fire department. It's not really how it works, and I understand why there'd be some confusion, because in Congress they can do that. At the State House they can do that. But in the New Bedford City Council, the ultimate budget maker is the mayor, and the city council can only cut from his budget, but they can control the transfers. And you'll see throughout the year that the mayor will come in and transfer money for other priorities. And so it's an all-year deal, right? It's an all-year type of process. So anyway, well, my work here is done. I am going to go out, not enjoy the day. It's beautiful, though. Make sure you head to Rose Alley if you got that option for chicken wings. But me, I'm going to go across the street, get all my blood taken out of my body, cleansed, and then put back in. And God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. And tomorrow is Wednesday. And I believe we'll be joined by the mayor of New Bedford, John Mitchell. So all of this with more information tomorrow. Stick around for Barry.